at session number 31558, reel 3.
Good thing, because they all said, this would be a wonderful idea, how exciting, we'll dig a canal. So they all started digging this canal. And after a couple of days, we'd gone a few metres deep enough to take the water, but not much more. And then we were told we were all going on leave, and we went in batches on leave to Cairo for a week. And that was very entertaining. Then we came back.
How did you spend your time in Cairo?
I stayed with Jack Pierce, because he was keen on antiquities. And we travelled around. We got a better... what do they call these guides? Your name is Hassan. Well, he was a guy. He came to the hotel, and we lived in a very nice hotel and had plenty of water to drink. We didn't feel like wine on the first day. We just felt water unlimited, really marvelous. And then we went to around, and we went to the pyramids and Giza, and we went to Saqqara and places like that, Memphis. And then at the end of the week, we went back on a train, and we were stopped on the train halfway back, saying the regiment was pulling out, and the brigade was. And so we stopped it was an underground place I slept in and lived in. I put my tent there, and there was a sandstorm for 3 days, I think, and it had been going for 4 days and went on again. We used to get the most tremendous sandstorms then because of the tracked vehicles cut up the surface, so when the wind blew, it was really very, very sandy. One night it was so bad, later on, when I went out and I wanted to see, thought I'd try and get to the troop sergeant's tent, see how he was. And I in the daytime, I couldn't see my hand in front of my face, literally. And I put down the torch, and I took 3 steps backwards, and I couldn't see the light of the torch. So I didn't go and see, visit my sergeant at all. We just waited. Well, it was another of these sandstorms, and we stayed there for 3 miserable days, just underground, nothing to do. I didn't feel very well after my leave. I think I'd eaten something too good for me, really, but I wasn't serious. And then we were sent right back to Sidi Bish camp outside Alexandria, on the east of Alexandria. And we were there for a short time. We got tanks issued to us. And then we were moved up from there to just beyond the pyramids, to a camp there. And I got sent off to collect some staff cars from the workshops, and we got them, and we got some. Some managed to start by towing, and they were all broken down, but we knew the fitters could fix them. And I got, I think, 19 or 20 of them, and towed the others. And we got them back, and we fixed up the regiment was re-equipped with new Crusaders. But the tracks didn't fit the driving sprocket, so they all had to be refitted with old tracks, which was very hot work, because by that time it was April. And anyhow, we got them all going, and then Hottie had been killed in he was wounded in November. He'd been in a mobile hospital, and the Italians came and took all the water away, and then the Germans came and made them give it back, because the Italians behaved extremely bad at that stage of the war, and the Germans behaved very properly, but afterwards, of course, things were rather different. Anyhow, he was taken back, and by the time he got back, he got gangrene, and he died, and it was very sad. And my squadron leader then was Dennis Hill Wood, took over B Squadron. And we tried all kinds of exercises then to see how we could get close enough to do some damage to Mark 3s and Mark 4s, mainly Mark 3s because they were thicker. And they had a 50mm gun. Mark 4 had a 75, which was not so bad to us in those days. And we managed to... We had Grant tanks. And so A Squadron was equipped with Grants. And then there was a lot of discussion. Should it be one Grant per troop or one Grant per squadron? Or how they should be used? But they decided to have a Grant squadron. And that was A Squadron. And when you came back from... when you were at Sidi Bish, we were planning all sorts of things. I remember one exercise, we had to go... I was taking Tony Jarvis's troop because I was supposed to be navigating officer at that time. And we had to charge down a wadi, and there were petrol 40-gallon petrol drums painted black, which was represent 88mm. And when it was my turn to go down to command the troop going down, I forgot about one of these and turned around the corner, and there it was. So I fired at it and went straight at it. And everybody said, you'd have been dead if you'd done that, in real fact. And I'm sure they were quite right. But the new colonel quite liked it. He said, oh, he had a good deal of dash about him, about the way he dealt with it. So I didn't say I'd forgotten about the thing. I left that. And then, anyway, then we were outside Cairo, Sidi Bish, and one day, Dennis Hillwood, who had been prepared this, fired his Tommy gun up in the air, and we were knowing that was a signal that we were under attack. And so we were supposed to start up how quickly we could start. Well, my tank couldn't start at all. And the reason was, we soon found, there was water and petrol, seawater. And every single tank in the squadron, we had to take the water tanks out, empty them, and refill with fresh water, because there was... Apparently the lighter that was bringing the shore at Port Tawfiq or Suez had been sunk by the air, by Italians or Germans, and the water had leaked in, just like most of the cans were half empty or even three quarters empty, some completely with the leaks, unless we could get hold of jerry cans. And it was these, instead of water, petrol coming out, sea water had gone in. And so that was pretty hard work. I remember that very well, taking all those petrol tanks out and then sort of just screw them back into position.
Would you be able to explain the layout of the tanks inside?
Yes, easily. The commander was in the centre at the back. The driver on his right at the bottom, and the gunner on the left. And so there's just the three in the... There's the crew of three. Well, three in the turret, rather. The driver below, the loader was on his right, behind the driver. And there was officially... another person in the outer turret what would it be in England, on the off side, away from the edge where the, on the near side where the driver was not. But in those days they thought it was a waste of one machine gun didn't count at all. So we didn't use those things. People put in rubbish to try and make them thicker. piles of bully beef tins and things like that. But it was a waste, really. It was ridiculous. It would have been all right, presumably, in France, but they were so behind the times for German equipment. They were so much better than ours always. And particularly, it was the 88 millimeters. Well, anyway.
How were you were in the commander tanks? Was
well, I was started as navigating officer. Then Jack Pierce thought of a marvelous idea to have if he could swing his the three-ton lorry so that he could use a compass in it, a navigating compass. If he could then have an extension from the myelometer up into the back where it was, he would rotate this, keeping north all the time, and it would track the distance he'd been, wherever he was in the desert. Well, this I'd like to drive for you. So I used to drive off round the delta, scattering chickens and people and sort of thing, in a quite good-natured way. And when we came back, he'd have a long, wiggly line. It would never join up with itself, which it ought to have done when he got back to City Bish. And eventually, the brigade got rather keen on this idea. So he was put onto brigades, and it was apparently perfected, but I never saw the finished version. And then he became ADC to... hold it a sec. So I got number one troop, B squadron, as troop leader. And we moved up the tanks, we trained them during the day at near Cairo. And we went from there right up to... where the Knightsbridge box was. We were behind that, and there was a German had a wire, and the British had a wire, and the minefields in front. And we were back a bit, and then I had my 21st birthday, and that was rather nice because the mess got a real special occasion for this, and they made a cake with ground up biscuits as the flour, and they got some sugar on it and melted sugar over it, and 21 candles, and there was unlimited whiskey, of course, because our QMS, Punch Jones, had been in the Boer War, and he was over 60, and so he was given the job of ferrying a three-tonner up to the regiment from Cairo, full of gin and whiskey and cigarettes mainly. Beer wasn't much good, because even if you buried it in the ground, it was so hot that it would fizz all out completely. So we had beer and whiskey mostly. And he was doing this job at Darba when Montgomery came along. This was after I was wounded. But Montgomery came along and saw him with his Boer War medals up and his great war medals up. And so I said, "How old are you?" And Jones told him. He was called Punch Jones because he looked rather like Mr. Punch. And told him, and so Montgomery said, "You go back to England on the next boat." And he did, but it took a long time because the boat went via China. At that time, I thought, I'm really tired of the desert. How nice it would be to go to Singapore and fight the Japanese instead. What luck that was, we didn't go.
How did you find the general life in the desert and the climate in the desert?
Well, I found it rather interesting being a zoologist or budding zoologist, and I sometimes found snakes and the dung beetles. We used to have what was called the Akingi steaks, every now and then we'd have a beetle racing meeting in the mess, and we had a circle. The beetles would all had their marking colours on them, painted on, and we were under a pot in the centre. And the people betted enormous quantities of money for those days, lifted the lid up, and the first beetle, without any encouragement or anything else, to cross the distant mark, I think it was a yard radius. The first beetle to cross that was the winner.
In terms of things like personal hygiene, how did you adapt to the hot climate?
Well, considering everything, we think we adapted rather well. Some people got desert sores and so on, but that was really due to the lack of vitamins. We were supposed to have had oranges, but we never got them, they never got up. RESC people ate them all on the way. And one time there was a dump, and one of my drivers went and threw stones at the RESC. The RESC threw oranges back at them, and so they collected quite a lot of oranges. That was when I had the transport troop, before I got a crusader for myself. So, I think if we'd had more vitamins, we'd have been a bit better. But otherwise, everybody was very fit, particularly when we were away from the flies around the delta area of Kaur, around the Nile. Then everybody was very fit indeed, and our topis were all blown away in the first part of Crusader, and people, although they said if you get sunburn, you lose a day's pay or something, nobody did. Everybody got terribly brown. In fact, when we went on leave, it was surprising how much the brown washed off. It was dirt, but still it obviously protected our sweat glands from getting overheated.
In terms of the heat itself, how did you find that you coped?
I sweated like anything, and so I've always been able to stand heat quite well. But there, the thing was to have one mug of tea when you got up, as soon as the first light, and then to drink nothing during the day, and then to drink plenty in the evening. But if you drank in the day, you sweated straight away and lost it. But when it cooled off at night, you could drink without it coming causing any harm. So I my crew as well did the same thing. And with exceptions, like when we had the 21st birthday, it was all very well. I had two guests. I went around and visited people in the mornings. It was my 21st birthday. And they all told me how they'd, what the excitement they'd had during before the war. And so on, because I was really, by that time, I was the youngest person in the regiment, the youngest officer in the regiment, anyway. This is long getting in. But after that, it was May 23rd. May the 27th, we were, the 26th rather, we were moved from our rather dug in positions we got, and everybody thought this is done by brigade who wanted to save themselves the trouble of digging these nice holes that we dug for the tanks and the lorries. And Dick Sutton, the captain, wrote a big notice saying, "What a mug to have dug a hole so big for the brig." And the brigadier actually didn't want it, because the next morning we woke up and we could hear gunfire. Every night, of course, before that, we had to be have guards. Everybody took their turn of guards. It was usually about an hour. And I bought a baby fox on the way up from an Arab for half a piastre and two overripe bananas. And this little fox, it was decided that it must be a vixen, actually. There's a good deal of speculation amongst those members of the regiment who were good at fox hunting. They thought it was a vixen. So they called her No Ball, because my code name was High Ball. And that was because one time they'd come in and said, "This water's absolutely awful, it's so saline and salt." and haven't you got any whiskey? And they said, oh yes, gave it to me. And Tim Smallwood, who was second in command, said, you tell us the last bit of whiskey we've got until the lorry comes up, and you're going to drink it all with water. And the rumour was that it was the Germans made the well salt. Of course they weren't. They were salt naturally, as often the case. But the well, the Antilat well, that wasn't salt. That was beautiful water, because it was so deep down, it's 40 yards down. I could show you a photograph of it.
How much contact did you have with the Egyptian population?
Very little. It didn't really particularly... We didn't have anything against them, but we didn't have anything in common with them, really. There. There's the well. There's the breakdown lorry. There's the Dodge truck that drove up to here, and it was pumped into there. And this is a visiting crusader. I don't know why that came in, but I put in the picture. And this other was on the EFT route, another job I was given. You know, I was given all these extra special jobs when transport was brigaded, and with the I had to take a lorry, five lorries, I think it was, back full of German prisoners. And they were only too anxious to get back. They didn't like the war at all. And at night we sort of put our bags around beside the wheels of the trucks to get some shelter from the wind. It was very cold on it, air fruit in the winter. And when I got back there and I had to hand them over to some RASC people, they said, oh, get those bastards out here, so on. Well, our people were sorry for the Germans and give them cigarettes and a cup of coffee, a cup of tea occasionally, that sort of thing. Because we were, in a way, quite friendly with the Germans, because they behaved according to the rules. But the Italians didn't. They behaved very badly. Anyway, after Mussolini's departure, the Italians behaved extremely well. So, that was that. Anyhow, the next morning, we went on, and I saw, after a bit, we came to a long row of tanks in the distance, rather hidden, which were firing towards us, and some crusaders in front, and a grant or two on the left. And one of the grants was his and caught fire, and the crew bailed out. No, nobody was hurt. And then the crusaders fell back, and we were left in line, the four troops of B squadron mainly. A squadron was the Grant squadron. That wasn't a squadron Grant, it was somebody else's, probably 3rd COI. And these German tanks came on, and then when we got to about 1,000 yards, we fired at them a bit, but it was outside our range, and so we were falling back all the time. And then they came a bit nearer, and I knocked out my tank, Alf Carr the gunner, knocked out a Mark III, because it stopped and there was a spiral of smoke came out. But you couldn't see anybody bail out, because they had side doors on it. So ours, of course, everybody could see you bailing out of the turret. And another awful thing about the Crusaders, and it was the same thing with the Cromwells we had in Normandy, if you traverse the turret more than about 40 degrees either way, the back of it blocked the exit for the driver. So you had to remember, can't traverse more than that, or the driver will be burnt to death if it's hit. And that was a bad thing. Anyway, I was talking about Noble. She used to spend the day on the floor of the turret in a pool of oil, trying to get cool. And then she came up and we gave her bully beef, which she liked. Am I getting on time? I certainly am. And so anyhow, she was sent back to LOB, left out of battle camp, and of course we thought things were. Then these tanks came towards us, and I knocked out a Mark 3, and then a Mark 4. Then I, definitely, and then other people were shooting at the Mark 4, but it had already stopped. And so we were pulling back, and then my troop sergeant's tank was hit, and the crew bailed out onto the troop corporal's tank, and he went took them back. And the sergeant was on the back of my tank, and so I thought this is rather dangerous for him. So I turned around and went back and dropped him off in reserve, and I came back forward to where I'd been before, and I was the only person there. The others had all gone, so I had all these German tanks started shooting at me. So I put down a local smoke in front, and then the smoke mortar jammed, and I didn't really dare turn around in case we got a sideways on. But we crashed back into a huge weapon pit, which I hadn't seen, up the other side, and got back, and I got a very nice hull-down position on a ridge. And I stopped on that, and the rest of them, my troop corporal came back, and the rest of the squadron, that hadn't been knocked out, took up lines on each side of me, and we held that, and the Germans came to within about 900 yards, and then they stopped to refuel. We could see them unloading from the lorries into their tanks and so on. So we fired off all our Beezer ammunition, practically, firing at these people. And they must have, they were within range of machine guns, even if they weren't any good to fire two-pounder at them. And then we were pulled back from there, and it was supposed to be in reserve. And Tony Jarvis said, "Well, did you enjoy your first tank battle as much as you thought you would?" And I said, "No, I didn't. It wasn't anything like as fun and exciting as I thought it would be. It was rather nasty, in fact. But we waited there until evening, and then a message came through. Because I had a wireless, whereas the troop corporal still had to go by me waving a flag to him. And he said the dozen enemy tanks, B squadron, to form line and charge them. Well, we went along, and as we were going to them, I saw a German officer with maps and things like that, so I called up on the wireless, and Robin Morm, who was intelligence officer, went and captured him, and he wrote a book, Come to Dust, where his conversation with this German officer fills up a lot of space. And then we came up and we saw this 20, whatever it was supposed to be, Mark 3s. In actual fact, there was a 15th Panzer Division. In front of them there were 20 Mark 3s, and then 6 Mark 3s. And so they said, this thing which somebody said demoralizes the Germans is if you form line and charge them. But what we had practiced was more cunning. Troop leader put down smoke. We charged up, waited till the smoke cleared, fired 2 or 3 shots at them. This was the idea we'd been practicing. Then put down our local smoke, retire under that, and come away, hopefully unscathed. Well, we were supposed to do that, but we got as far as the putting down the local smoke, and then they said, charge right through now. Well, my troop, at least me and a troop corporal, because that was all that was left, were on the right-hand side, and so we started to charge through. And the whole of this column, they were having their brewing up their supper, so they stopped for a moment to have a shot at us. And the amount of stuff that came over was quite colossal. We were zigzagging all the time. When we were, the time before when I'd got up in front, I had a 50mm had gone in and taken the cap off the petrol tank and made a hole in the side. And if it had gone any lower, it would have hit the fans, and that would have been the end of us then.